Hello and welcome to AMO Kenzoku episode 86. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer Otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
I am Sam.
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hey y'all, I'm Mike.
And I am Dylan. This episode is being recorded on July 30th, 2026. Today we will be continuing our discussion of End of Evangelion from last time. Death and Rebirth and Ends and all those film things there. With that, Hashin. So... the story up to now of Eva, up to end of Eva, is that a boy sees a ray image and then a lot of things happen. And then he's sad standing outside a lake. So that's the summary of Eva.
Yeah. It's very accurate.
In 3 seconds, yeah, that's the beginning and end, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, it's about as clear.
The middle
too.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. It's actually, if you put into account the amount of lucidity that's involved, yeah, that's basically everything. Those are about the most lucid moments. So.
So being this is End of Evangelion, and there's so many different ways that we could go and take this, I'm going to kind of just start going off into some crazy things and say, hey, if you're listening to this, you know, go watch the movie 1 to 30 times and then join in the discussion of the madness that is this film.
Although we should probably, not that it's necessary per se, but just full spoiler disclosure, because that's
yes.
going to happen no matter
yeah.
what. So
yeah.
yeah. So I think one of the things that is interesting and is just what is kind of like what's not in this film and what is, because I was thinking about it. I'm like, the only time you've seen Eva fighting is 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
And
to be fair, that might be in my top two of all time greatest like giant robot fights, maybe just my period be my favorite. That sequence is to this day still just so technically impressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to go on, we can just go into there, and I will wholeheartedly say that yeah, that segment of the 0-2 battle through the evisceration is probably my favorite sequence in all of anime. It might just be that.
I might agree with you there. I mean, right off the top of my head, can't think of any that abjectly I would say are better. So
I will say that it's definitely at least the most memorable, even if not favorite, because I have a hard time picking favorites, but
yeah,
it's very iconic.
I think as well, it's one of the things where there's so many things about it that are cool, but I think part of it too was like it was so done for theatrical size. Mm-hmm. Like where you see 0-2 in there and you kind of see the view like from almost like you're from one of the helicopters and it's just on a screen and it's huge there like that. It was so cool in the way that they framed it and everything. Because I also think that aside from just taking all of the time and the care and the budget and everything there, like that, I don't think they did any framing like they did for that in the TV at all.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Can you clarify that?
Kind of the part where you see like just so much of like the view looking at 0-2 and it kind of like moving through the frame and around and just everything there. It just felt so, so crazy theatrical to me.
But I mean, it was a theatrical film first, so that makes sense.
Right,
to me.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not like they were just like, oh, well, we'll just do the same shots that we did in the TV and that's good enough.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the first thing, I mean, this topic has been talked to death, I think, in other various communications, but for all intents and purposes, end of Evangelion is basically alternative perspective of episodes 25 and 26 of the aired TV episodes is what is widely agreed upon.
I mean, it's in the movie, right?
Where yeah, it is. It's the... yeah, exactly. I think I can't remember if they put a dash or not on the number, but yeah, it literally has 25 and 26 in the cuts for the movie. So
yeah, it's got the prime there,
yeah, the prime.
And then also in I don't remember actually, because I was watching Eva TV through, and I got to a point, and I honestly didn't watch 25 and 26, and then I just got into the end part of it there, but I really need to watch those again because I've got like the on-air version and then the home video version that added some stuff. But even in the home video version, I think in there they added in like as kind of like, yeah, we had this as part of the thing of like some of the rough cut stuff from End of Eva.
Well, you just see if you go frame by frame and you actually see like tiny snippets of, you know, imagery that's clearly from what would ultimately become EOE. So, you know, it was definitely planned, in my opinion, the whole time. Where, right, that what we saw on TV was kind of what, you know, kind of Shinji's internal monologue, so to speak, of Eps 25 and 6, and then the actual EOE movie was what actually was happening externally. Is my take on it.
Go ahead.
Go.
Well.
No, you go.
Okay, I was just going to say, I've heard stuff about this, and I haven't really looked into it that much, but I just kind of, you know, pulled up the Wikipedia thing a little bit before, as I usually do, and I think that may be a true interpretation, but also I think maybe is a little bit of a retcon, because it sounds like, my understanding is that the TV show deviated for some reason or another from what they originally planned. And then fans found it disappointing, and so they went back and tried to revive what they originally planned instead of that. So it was basically like a redo.
Yeah, and what's ironic is they then redid it again decades later.
Yeah.
So,
which also is interesting, because to your I don't know, I guess we'll say like theory or interpretation of like how they fit together, that the new stuff is also similar in that way, in that they all kind of coexist.
Yeah, and so I'm in the last episode I said I kind of have a greater overarching like Eva theory, and for me that is as contrite as it is that all of these events exist and happen in parallel, and they all are a reality, but not necessarily like, you know, synced, so to speak. So almost like a lost thing, which again, it's contrite. I think it's like, you know, especially this day and age, like the whole multiverse concept is like so overdone now for like the better part of a decade. But when you think about how long Eva's been around, then in my opinion, I think that makes the whole concept of what you see across all the Eva properties. And then, right, one of Shinji's final statements in 3.0 plus 1.0 is sayonara subete no evangelion. Like, that's a very particular statement for him to say, like, farewell to all of Evangelion, right? Like, so that's just my take on it, and we don't necessarily need to go into it, because we've obviously gone deep into the rebuilds, you know, early in this podcast career, and I'm perfectly okay, you know, leaving it there and continuing with EOE, because, you know, it's such a stark difference in, you know, well, at least at the end. I think, you know, elements of EOE were kind of interspersed within the entirety of Rebuild. But, you know, as a singular film.
I will say, if the newly announced TV series is again rebooting, I will be pretty upset.
Well, I don't see what else it could be, like, from
oh, man.
The perspective of... You know,
I've said it a zillion times that I just, there's, it's a big universe that they could do stuff in, and I feel it's wasted by not exploring it more. So hopefully,
yeah, my big question is just like, when is it going to take place?
And yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's really it, because you see nothing from the, and all we know is it's Yokotaro, right? At the helm. Yeah. It's like, oh, really cool choice, because I feel like thematically how Yokotaro, you know, at least from the perspective of game direction, you know, mm-hmm. does stuff, is to me aligns with how I would envision more Eva to go. But
yeah.
I'm not holding my breath too much for it, just because I'm very content with the body of work that Eva has already
Same.
done, especially now after the rebuilds.
Okay, so I'm just gonna hard cut here into things that aren't in this at all, which is, like, as I said, like, the only Eva fight is 0-2. Like, 0-1, literally, I think all it does is
get captured.
Its hand pops out to Shinji, and he hops in, and then he sees Asuka, freaks out, and then gets stigmated by the mass production series.
It's like the ultimate, like, blue ball, because when you right at the conclusion, at the halfway point, you see, you know, Eva, you know, Unit 1 emerge with these, like, lightning wings, and you're like, oh, what's happening here? And then you see Shinji kind of, you know, morose, and then he sees, you know, what happened to Unit 2 and presumably Asuka, and then you hear what is quite possibly the singular greatest performance in voice acting ever in that prolonged scream, you know, which, I mean, people meme on it now to this day. And then literally just gets captured by the adversaries and just is turned. It literally is used as the tool for instrumentality from there. Like, does mm-hmm. nothing in terms of resistance. And to me, it's like the greatest blue ball in the history of anime. is that cut? I don't know if that's a hot take or not. But.
No, I mean, there's so much, that's just like, there's nothing there, and, like, there's no Eva 0-0 at that point, because it had
been self-destructed, thanks to Ray.
Self-destructed.
Ray number 5072.
Yeah, you're left with this, and I forget the way, and somewhere in there as well, there was a reference to, I saw it in there somewhere, and I can't remember it. There was some reference to, like, Eva 13 as well.
Was there?
I saw something and I was like, wait, what the heck? I can't remember where the heck it was right now, because there's so many things.
I didn't pay attention to it, but what number did the series and Eva series end at?
Because I think they went up to 12.
Okay, so that's also,
I think,
I was thinking that too, which also is a, you know, kind of a telling number to leave it at.
Yeah, so I think it was 12, and then it might have been Zele that was talking about, like, the 13 and stuff like that. I think the reason, then I'll just say, this is End of Evangelion. I think it's probably just my favorite film, just period. I've seen it so many times. And thought and read about it in different ways, and I've never run out of interesting things to think about, and I've never walked out of it without feeling affected by the film. So that's where I kind of feel like, oh gosh, there's so many things of, like, so many interesting little side bits, like, for example, in parts where there's some of, like, the rapid kanji covering, like, image flashing that goes through there. Some of it is, like, literal hate mail that was sent to Ono by fans at the end of the TV series, and a shot of the Gainax store defaced with graffiti because people were so pissed about the end of the TV series. And then in the second spot in there, includes, like, shot of, like, a death threat email and, you know, photograph of the Gainax office building that was vandalized as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's so interesting because there's so much stuff that was literally taken back around. And then the live theatrical filming was from a showing of Death or Death and Rebirth that they literally filmed and then included as part of the actual final product that was released, you know, 4 months later.
And then also in that segment, there was a not so subtle shot of the three leading female voice actors in Megumi Hayashibara, Miyamoto Yuko, and I believe it was Mitsuyoshi Kotono as the third, just standing in the street in Tokyo, looking at the camera.
Oh, is that them?
Yeah.
Well, I know for fact that the one on the left is Megumi Hayashibara, and by association, you could assume the other two are Miyamoto Yuko and Mitsuyoshi Kotono, but
pretty good guess.
That would make sense.
Yeah, those three were, I think, and then there's the stuff where you see the cosplay characters. I believe those were actually like not people. I think they were like model, like mannequins that were costumed up and put out on the screen.
Sorry, just hearing about the mannequins. Isn't there a crowd of people walking? And I swear one of them in the crowd, like walking away, looks like Rey. Is that, did they put somebody in a costume, or am I just imagining that?
No, I 100% bet it's probably a cosplayer.
I know the scene you're talking about. I'm trying to remember, honestly, if I recognize seeing a Rey in there going the wrong way. See, this is the thing about this film. Like,
I just thought...
We're just like, wait, what? I never noticed that. What are you talking about?
I thought it was a really interesting, like, assuming that's what it was, is that... It was interesting because it, like, I don't know, it suggested that it was more, less anime and more live action, or like exist. It's a weird feeling, but it's almost like it was made it feel slightly more real than it would have been, you know, like as if it had been live action by just giving you a taste of a hint of it, just to kind of bring it a little bit more.
I get that. My only gripe is that doing it really dates the movie because you can just see when it was filmed. I was like, oh yeah, that's super 90s. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, as you know, obviously a child of the 80s, 90s, that's nostalgic for me, but it makes it considerably less timeless feeling because of those specific scenes, in my opinion, which is okay. Like, it's okay to have it be identifiable to an era. But I feel like as a property, Eva is one of those, you know, anime properties that's transcended so many generations.
Yeah. At the same time with that, I would say, like, there is so much of, like, you know, kind of like every movie has so many things that you wouldn't have made the same movie in the same way, you know, 10 years later, depending on whether it's the special effects technology or everything else. Like, because I think you could point to the marching of the blood, even though the blood Eva, that you're like, well, that doesn't necessarily look like the most incredible fluid thing ever, but it also, like, it fits and was done well, such you're like, yeah, it makes sense.
I was just doing a quick search here to see if I could find screenshots of what I was talking about. I didn't find that. I have a completely unverified post from somebody on Reddit that sounds true, so we'll have to do some research, but they say Ono has said that one of the main inspirations for Eva was him asking the question, is it okay for a grown man like me to be watching and enjoying anime about giant robots? Is this just meaningless escapism? Evangelion was made to answer that question. Part of that was making sure that we, the viewers, stopped and thought about what the show's message meant to us by pulling us out of the moment and reminding us of the real world, which is interesting.
I mean,
I think that's...
That sounds like something I would say.
Yeah, right.
I think that's entirely part of it. Like, sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many things, which is why it's been such a thought about thing is you can sit here and be like, okay, is that the true meaning? And I'm like, okay, well, what is the meaning of instrumentality? I mean, like, what is the meaning of the third impact? What the heck? How does Sele, like, here? Oh, okay. I'll stop for a second here before my mind goes crazy.
I mean, you're asking a whole bunch of topics. We can try to deconstruct them, you know, one at a time, but all at once is going to be hard.
Yeah. And that's almost like what End of Eva does. It's like, okay, we're just gonna deconstruct all these things at the same time, but not really deconstruct them. We'll just put them out there and also make it look like the most incredible thing you've ever seen.
I think just to pull on that thread a little bit more is that, like, clearly, I mean, this Evangelion is inextricable from, you can't separate it from Anno the man. It's like, it's very, I mean, it's clearly a very personal story, whatever, you know, including all the stuff. It wasn't just, you know, like these things, like he puts the freaking death threats in there, right? In the movie. That's like literally him showing you like part of what he went through making this thing for us. Right. It's just, he is in this movie, like in every sense of that word. Which is another thing that makes this movie really special, is that, like, it's one thing to experience a work of art and then go learn about the people who made it or the process of making it. But like this one, unlike basically almost any other anime, is that he is literally in it, like not just like his face, but like his experience is it's sometimes quite literally in this. The work, which is, I think, really interesting and unique about it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think no creator is more, like, visible in their work than Anno is through Evangelion, both in original TV through EOE and then the rebuilds. Like, you can really see how kind of tortured he was. literally tortured he was through EOE and then with the rebuild, where you could see that he, you know, he says this is what I would have made if I'm in the, you know, given the mind state I'm in now, and you get a very different end result. Still a phenomenal product, obviously, but the end result's quite different. So yeah, I do agree though, like no IP is more immediately associable with their director than Eva, I would say. I would agree.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like some other, and Mike, maybe you have something, because you have a lot of these good film references for something else that could be that way, like of something that is so much a person at the time.
The only other, I would say, property that I would affiliate very deeply with a creator would be original Ghost in the Shell, 90s movie to Oshii. Like, I think that film is like definitive in Oshii for me, how I interpret Oshii as a director.
I mean, Beautiful Dreamer is maximally Oshii too, though.
To be fair, it's been a very, very long time since I've seen Beautiful Dreamer, so.
But yeah, I'm trying to think. I feel like there have to be some, but they're not coming readily to mind right now.
Like, the ones that are coming in my head, and maybe it's also just partly because they're like great films, is some of like Kubrick's great stuff, like The Shining and things like that, where you really feel like this place of the person. But that's also is like an adapted thing from a novel, but like The Shining is, you know, infamously so different from the original novel there. But that's like, there's so few things that come out with such a personal feel like that.
Oh, and even the literal, like, here is the death threats that I suffered to make this thing for you, right? Like,
yeah,
that's extremely unique and deep's not the right word, but it's heavy, I guess. If you Very. Like, you don't really, you may not pick up on, especially, you know, we don't read Japanese, right? But I know that the Japanese viewers must have seen that and known what that was, or at least some people did.
Yeah. So I want to go with taking a kind of completely different one, a little bit more into one of the things they're like, Sele. Like, it's one of those things I've been trying to think about, kind of like the beginning thing where, you know, towards the very beginning where you see Gendo in the meeting with the Sele, the obelisks, and, you know, they're all talking about how they want the human instrumentality, and, you know, and then they say, okay, well, we'll give you death. And then they start their assault. But I'm kind of like, well, why did they have to do that? Like,
I do agree. Because here's where I could never, this is why I think my theory on why the end of the I hate to keep bringing up the rebuilds, but there's definitely correlation, right? Why the rebuilds were more focused on Gendo as the antagonist, whereas it was much more blurred in EOE. And the question I always ask is, it's obvious Zele wants instrumentality, like that's obvious. What was less obvious was, what was Gendo's final goal? Because wouldn't instrumentality ultimately have also given Gendo what he wanted, which is to get back to Yui? And all the stuff that occurs, it seems like his plans are ruined, because he's, you know, he's basically integrating the fragment of Adam, which is the what he put into his palm, with Rei, who is kind of a construct to get him to Yui. But then she, you know, rejects Gendo, you know, basically absorbs that fragment of Adam, and then now, right, reintegrates with Lilith. But at the end of it all, like, Gendo still ends up, you know, seeing Yui anyway, so wouldn't instrumentality also have gotten Gendo what he wanted? So why was he, in the beginning, insisting on fighting against Sele? That was all something I could never really, really, truly get a clear understanding of what his motivations were.
I'd never thought about that before, to be honest. Yeah, that's a good question.
Because when you distill it all down, at the end, you know, I don't want to, like, move everything forward too far, but at the very end, everything is put on Shinji's shoulders, and Shinji says, you know what, I don't want everybody to suffer anymore, so I'm just gonna, you know, basically, you know, rip the band-aid off and go through with instrumentality. And that's obviously what Sele wanted. It ends up more or less getting everybody else what they want, because at least they go back to, you know, like, you see it with the three techs, right? Maya, Hyuga, and I always forget Koyas's character's name. I never remember it. Yeah. I just know his name is Koyas, but, yeah, you know, they, he's obviously terrified at the end, but, like, Hyuga, you know, he sees, you know, Misato, and, you know, and that's what he wants to see. And then, of course, Maya famously, you know, sees Ritsuko, and, you know, and embrace, they all, you know, they both embrace and turn into LCL, and it's like, okay, they got what they wanted. So, why...
Didn't Shinji undo that at the end, though? Wasn't that the idea? He, in the end, rejects it.
Well, no. So, I think that's that he did it, but he rejected it for himself. As the way I interpret it is, he rejected it for himself as a penance, because he's like, I don't like, because, right, that the scene with, you know, famous scene where Rei's straddling him, and he's basically pushing her away and saying, yeah, I'm actually not going to stay. Because from my perspective, in that scene, that's him within the LCL, you know, instrumentality pool of everyone, and then that's him rejecting that and being like, no, I'm just gonna, you know, go back, and obviously takes Asuka with him, because I feel like it's all an allegory for heaven and hell, and he's basically subjecting himself to purgatory and taking the person that caused him both the most abject misery, but is also, like, the person that he wants the most attention from in Asuka to basically be with him. And that's how I interpret it. I think there's a lot of people that think some of it's similar or not. That's just my interpretation of it, of course. But all of that, to me, but why at the beginning didn't Gendo just let it happen then? Because ultimately it would have just sped everything up, instead of, you know, going through the massive amounts of, you know, physical anguish that all those poor nerve people had to go through before the end. So that's what I always wondered, is why was Gendo fighting so hard? Like, if instrumentality would have gotten him what he wanted, so what is it what he really wanted, or is this something different? Like, what would have happened if Gendo actually, you know, maintained control of Rey and completed what he, what would have happened? I that's my question. That's always a question I've asked and never really could find an answer to.
I have here's two things I'll say. One is that it could be that he wanted to take Shinji's role and basically
be the one to make the decision.
Right. And then, because to make sure, like, he could control exactly what happened. And the other thing is that, this doesn't really answer the question, but wasn't there a scene where Fuyutsuki's talking to Yui, and she's talking about her plan versus Sele's plan, and he's, you know, Fuyutsuki's like, yes, we'll make sure to carry out your plan or whatever. I can't remember if they articulated the difference between the two. Does anybody else remember?
I remember the scene, but I feel like Fuyutsuki, like, as soon as Fuyutsuki sent, like, basically allowed Gendo to walk away, he was okay with whatever end result, because if he had any skin in the game left, he would have probably, I don't know, it's hard. Fuyutsuki's such a difficult character to pin down, right? Because he is, they reveal very, very little about him.
I just mean
his motivation, so.
That the way I interpreted that scene is that these three people are all aligned on what the plan was. And so whatever Fuyutsuki was and Yui were talking about must be Gendo's plan. That's what I interpreted that. So if, like, you wanted an answer, maybe there's something there. That's why I'm like, but I don't remember what that was, because it was also kind of confusing.
But no, I can be on board with the fact that Gendo wanted to be the catalyzer of instrumentality because he wanted it to go, you know, a very particular way. However, it just so happened that Shinji being the catalyst ended up getting him to where he wanted, maybe with a lot of extra steps and maybe with a whole lot of other people getting kind of yanked into it in the process. Maybe Gendo wasn't going to have the entire world, you know, and so to speak, but he still ended up getting what he wanted, so he seemed at peace. Although, I mean, when you look at what really happened to him, that was the interesting part. Gendo was the only person who actually still, at least from what my recollection, basically remains partially as a corpse, because you see Unit 1 pick him up, take a bite of him, and then you just see a pair of legs standing there. Mm-hmm. But he didn't get turned into LCL, whereas all the other corpses did. Ritsuko did. Misato did. All of the dead nerve people did. But Gendo's legs were still there. So I don't know if that was Shinji's punishment to his dad for being pretty awful the entire time to him.
Well, that'd be rough.
I totally don't remember seeing Gendo's legs.
Now I have to look
sitting
it
there. But it's true, like, everybody else gets instrumentalized. But then I'm like, okay, yeah, if everyone gets instrumentalized, and then Shinji at the end kind of says that, okay, anybody who wants to can come back. And, you know, I take it as, like, okay, he decided he wanted to come back, and, like, Asuka must have decided that she wanted to as well, and presumably others in the world did too. But I'm trying to figure, is this like almost like a rapture? Then people are like, okay, yeah, I'm done with heaven now. I don't know. I'm gonna hop out of here later. Heavenly host, I'm hopping back down into my earthly body.
So you think, like, Shinji gave them the choice, maybe? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I think, because that's what he says, that pretty literally. He's like, anybody can, I'm trying to remember from different translations and all the stuff there, but he's like, you know, anybody who wants to can return, is my interpretation of what he says.
But their return, they return as they don't return as people, they return as LCL.
Oh, so so how did Shinji and Asuka then return as people and not as LCL?
Because that's my interpretation, is that Shinji says, I don't deserve to be in this. Because the logic is that once you break the AT fields and there you take away people's individuality, you take away their ability to hurt each other. So everybody technically is at perfect peace. But Shinji says, Shinji's logic is, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve to be, because my indecisiveness and my, you know, being a POS, at least in his own mind, makes it, you know, makes me not deserve this. And at the same time, I think his own cowardice is, I don't want to go through this alone, so I'm going to take the person that caused me the most anguish with me, which is Asuka. But again, it's such a weird dichotomy, because she is both the one that causes him the most torment, but is also his greatest desire at the same time. And we see that at the very beginning. Yeah. with one of the most, if not the most notorious scene in all of anime.
Yeah.
So that's, and here's where, I want to get to this later, but I think it correlates now. So you know, the entirety of Third Impact, right, first of all, is, again, I said it last time, it is singularly the greatest animated, or greatest interpretation of the end of the world ever, in my opinion. I can't think of a single movie, show, anything that has shown the end of the world better than the Third Impact in EOE. And that's also, for me, heavily tied to the song, right, that's played along with it, Come Sister Todd, which translates to Come Sweet Death. Mm. And I don't know, I did a lot of research on this, because it's probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite song out of all ever, outside of maybe the original op. But Anno wrote the lyrics, and then had the lyrics translated into English and performed by the performer Ariane. And the lyrics are, to me, the most telling part about my whole theory, because it opens up with, I know I let you down. I've been a fool to myself. I thought that I could live for no one else. But now, through all the hurt and pain, it's time for me to respect the ones you love mean more than anything. So with sadness in my heart, feel the best thing I could do is end it all and leave forever. What's done is done. It feels so bad. What once was happy, now is sad. I'll never love again. My world is ending. And it continues on and on and on. And then there's the refrain of, it all returns to nothing. It just keeps tumbling down, tumbling down, tumbling down. And that's, to me, that is indicated to me that that's him going forward with Third Impact and letting instrumentality happen. That's my interpretation of it, anyway.
Hmm. I did not know that he wrote those lyrics.
That
changes them a lot.
and then I mean, when you listen to it, it's not English, right? It's very clear messaging, and whoever translated it and turned it in, and then put it into the song, masterful job. Yeah. I don't know if the actual performer did it or not, but somebody did.
I mean, I would assume probably Michael House did it, because he was the in-house Gainax English language person.
Yeah, but again, so that whole sequence, to me, the song especially, is literally, to me, is Shinji saying exactly why he's going through with Third Impact, and kind of why he's punishing himself as well. Like, because to him, again, Third Impact is him giving the whole world a sweet release from pain, but he doesn't deserve that, is what I'm internalizing.
Right.
Let's, you know, this is one of those things, like, that's interesting. I hadn't ever thought about the self penance aspect, and that Shinji purgatorized himself and
Asuka
by kicking them out of the good soup.
The good soup. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good theory. Yeah, I like it. I don't know if, you know, there's still a lot to, there's so much to think about.
Oh, yeah. And I don't pretend to be an expert. This is just, again, my internalization of it. But it at least lets me understand how otherwise I can justify believing that Shinji is like, you know what, I am literally God right now, and I have the power to do anything, and this is what I choose. And Rei is just like, I am just here to do what makes you happy, because that's my whole existence in life now. She's like, if this is what you want, this is what you get. And then you see the rapturing, like that sequence, especially that cut where you see sweeping across the world. We see all those crosses coming up, and, you know, all those, what I would assume would be all of humanity's souls being sucked into, you know, super, super not creepy giant white Ray's hands. Like, so, but the previous talking point about Gendo wanting to be the facilitator, but ultimately being okay with his son being the facilitator because it still got him what he wanted and his probably what he deserved. And again, it makes sense given Sinji's toxic relationship with them that Gendo's end was the most violent and most visceral.
So coming back to this, so your thought is that Gendo's whole thing the whole time was he was kind of, you know, whatever you want to call it, like using the Evas as the necessary thing to move stuff along. And then when Sele made their final assault, that his intent there was to take his atom hand and rejoin it with Lilith, and that would make him, rather than Eva 01, the tree of life and death. Is that what your thought is there?
I more or less, yeah. I still feel like it would have still involved something with Eva, because right, it still was not complete until Ray merging with Adam Ray, let's call it, came into contact with Shinji, is when you finally got the, that's when Shinji turned into God.
I mean, I do think that you did need an Eva for this to work.
Yeah,
that seemed important.
Yeah, but that's probably why Gendo was okay with Eva 1 being buried in Bakelite, because he's like, I know where it is. So, to demonstrate that I'm not smoking crack, I'm dropping in a screen grab of the cut right as Gendo gets bitten in half. And again, I see that as Gendo legs and a spine sticking out with his glasses on the ground. That's what I see.
Yep, looks what it looks like to me.
But that notwithstanding, he still ultimately gets to, at least from his perspective, see Yui again. But what really happens, right, is Yui is now forever lost in the universe, like for all of eternity.
I feel like he must be in there, right? Like they don't show him going to LCL, but
that's the thing, is I'm not 100% confident. I think he was actually, again, this is just interpreted, but why would just his legs remain, right? Like, that's such a specific imagery. So,
I could just be being brutal to him because he was a jerk. I don't know. One last FU.
Also, I'm fairly certain that him seeing Yui was just his desire, not what happened, because again, at the very end, we see Unit 1 is basically forever lost, derelict in space with the spear floating forever. Like, Shinji even has to say his final goodbye because, like, yeah, this is what has to be. Eva Unit 1 is just going to be the last remnant of humanity, and it's going to be, you know, the final physical piece of evidence that humans existed, I believe is what you said. And so it's just going to be destined to float in space forever. And are we in agreement that Yui is Eva 1, Unit 1? Like, are we in agreement with that?
Well, she's in there.
Her soul is in there, right? Yeah. Like, she's in there somewhere. She's trapped in there. And so, how is Gendo actually able to reunite with her if that's her final fate? Unless the Unit 1 biting him in half was him getting integrated in with her? I don't know, maybe? That could be a maybe more happy way to look at it.
Yeah. Hmm. So, did Yui get what she wanted?
Oh boy, that's a tough one.
Because I could see it from one interpretation, and I think this is going back to the discussion between Yui and Fuyutsuki, where it kind of feels like that is what she's saying, is she's like, no, we need to have this thing as this forever totem. I'm having trouble remembering the exact, like, text of that segment right now, but I feel like she was kind of saying like, no, we need to have Eva be like this forever totem, and that's what I'm working for. So it feels in that way.
I thought she wanted humanity like to exist.
Okay.
But ultimately, I think she's a selfish being. She's, I just want a safe world for my son, is probably what she truly, truly wanted. Because you can see in those scenes, like, she's focused. She's talking with Ryutsu, but she's focusing on Shinji the whole time. So,
yeah,
maybe she got what she wanted. Monkey's paw. She's like, yeah, Shinji's fine. No, nothing can hurt him anymore. He's by himself. After he raptured everyone. That's everybody got what they want, I guess. Question mark.
And I think there's so much. Yeah, it's, you know, there's so many things here, and there's so many things we haven't even gone to. And I'm just like, oh, putting my hand on my temple here. There's no end to this. Which again is why it's, you know, such a fabulous film. Let's see here. I'm gonna back off of that for a second there and go into some of the visuals and sound production stuff for a little bit there, just to take a breather on the
psychological, with that. Yeah,
philosophical.
Let's give our brains a bit of a
A couple of segments in the thing, which is all just done so incredibly well, that have just stuck with me forever, is two of the cuts where one of them is where you have the giant ray hands kind of doing the sphere around to get into, like, to kind of envelop Shinji, and it's just like, it is done so well with just like the way that the giant ghost hands are moving through space at this incredible scale. And again, once again, it was like, oh, well, we're doing a movie. Let's do a movie and have giant ray that's bigger than the earth. And that's a film. And then one of the other things that is done so well and is just, it's kind of gross and everything there, is when Unit 01 pops out of the eyeball.
I know, that's amazing cut. The animation's so good, though. And, like, the giant space rays, like, basically head getting severed, and just the slow kind of fall and, you know, collapse back down to Earth. Like, just insane technical execution of the to represent the scale of that. Like, yeah, completely agree. And it's, yeah, unsettling to say the least. Like, one of the most unsettling things.
Very unsettling. I
mean, yeah. Yeah.
But definitely as a kid, the part you least want to watch with your parents?
I'd still contest the first scene is probably the scene I least want.
Oh, yeah, that's parents. True, I guess. That's... I guess that's true. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one comes in second then.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing. I just to add a bit of levity, is this is how I knew there were first-time watchers in my theater, because right after that scene, there was one audible dude after that scene. I was like, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to take it as a as an opening segment to a film and be like, okay, get ready. Here you go. Yeah. This is you wanted an Evangelion movie.
This is how we're starting.
Here we go. Yeah. Here's your parting, here's the entry shot.
Yeah.
We're starting from here. Let's roll. Yeah.
Buckle up.
buckle up, buckaroo, because it's going to be a wild ride. And then Shinji proceeds to be completely and utterly worthless for the next probably 35 minutes, and Misato being the hero that she is.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then as well with all so many other different things there, where you have, you know, the first shot with Shinji with the semen on the hand, and then you have later in the film Shinji looking at the same hand in the same way with the blood from Misato on his hand that isn't looks nearly exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many of these things there, and I keep finding more sites and essays and things. Another piece that it was just something that I read very recently that now I'm like just obsessed with is this thing with open and closed fists in Eva.
Mm-hmm.
I forget exactly where I came across it, but there's this whole thing that talks about like open and closed fists, and like it is such a thing throughout the entire series from the first episode through like through to basically like the end of like when the fist is closed, you know, it's this very kind of like, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but I say this kind of like very Buddhist thing of like, oh, the closed fist is, you know, tight and strong, but it's not open to anything else. And then you have the open one that is open to other interpretations and things there. And like, you always, then once you hear about this series, then you're like, you watch, you're like, huh, yeah, where is, what's Shinji's fist doing in this? Is it open? Is it closed? Is he striking something with it? Is his hand open? So that's a whole nother barrel of theories.
I feel like that's also a kind of a anime tropey thing too, though, right? Like there's a lot of the viewing the back of the outstretched hand, open hand, closing the hand kind of thing. Looking, I think, you know, looking at your hand and opening it and closing it and examining the, wow, what a weird thing I am. Kind of a thing. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that started with Eva. I don't know, but I do feel like I've seen that elsewhere.
Yeah, it's hard to say, but it's one of the things too where I think the thing about Eva and end of Eva and everything there is that like everything was done with intent and artistic integrity and wasn't like, yes, it was done to, like, particularly the TV series and everything as well was done to entertain and everything as, you know, many good pieces of art do, where they are inspiring and entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason you can't be both.
Yeah, definitely. You're saying that like, there's probably something more to that and more intentional to these things.
Yeah. Yeah. There was that. I think that's the thing that keeps Eva going there is like, there's just so much stuff where it's like, no, there was thought put into this. This wasn't just, I don't know, it might look cool. Like some things I think in there at some parts are like, well, can we do this in a way that makes it look cool? And it's like, well, yeah, let's do that, but not strictly just because it looks cool.
I guess if I was going to try and put some imagined meaning into it, it was, because I don't remember, I remember Shinji doing the hand thing. Mm-hmm. And that was mostly just, I don't know, maybe it was him examining something to do with his existence, right? Like, yeah, I don't know. It hating being alive even, or something.
So, we are coming down to the end of our time here, and clearly we've done a great job of discussing like all of the facts, fiction, theories, everything around this film. This has been we've answered all questions. Everything is known now.
Yep. Never need to talk about this ever again.
Nope. Never another discussion. We've answered every question, including what the heck is the deal with like the fake spear of longinus that comes in, and where the hell does that come from?
Oh man,
from?
I was gonna ask what about that. What was up with that?
I don't know. That's another I don't know.
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
To add to the pile of I don't knows, what were Gendo's final words to Ritsuko before he shot her?
Yeah.
Wait, was it?
Yeah, that one's been a light.
Was it him or her?
Tight lipped thing.
He said something, so he always says "Akagi Hakase," and then, you know, I've always, and then you just see the mouth movement and silence, and then just the gunshot. I'm like, what did he say to her? Like, what?
And she says, liar. She says, liar.
Yeah,
right.
I'm like,
yeah,
what? Like, it's almost like a sign. It's almost like a she put her guard. She's like, oh, you're such a liar, and then she accepts it, and you know, is not gonna fight the fact that, you know, she's lost. But, and then we didn't even talk about, like, the whole Maggie system and how, you know, it, why were they working so hard to protect We kind of know why, but because they're the originals. But also the fact that each of the Maggie systems is basically a piece of Ritsuko's mom, who was the creator of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, each represents, like, a piece of her. Like, it's, I can't remember. They even talked about it. It's like, one is represents her intellect, the other represents something, and the other represents her womanhood. And the woman, the one that represents her womanhood is ultimately one that betrayed her, because when she tries to blow everything up, she's like, oh, really? You're going to pick him over me? Here.
Yeah, I was like,
so.
Woman, mother, and.
Yeah, that's like, it. Yeah.
Scientist.
Yeah. That's right.
But that's because we haven't done any episodes on EVA TV.
Yeah.
So, so that's we next. Haven't done that yet. That's not covered here. That's out of scope.
Out of scope. Yeah.
True.
Okay. So, I'll start here with some parting words, which is that this is an endless well. An incredible film, an incredible piece of art, and I've been watching it for at least 25 years now.
Matt Damon got GIF.
Matt Damon got GIF.
Yeah.
Am I missing something here?
There's a famous meme of Matt Damon just standing dejected, like with his hand against the wall and just looking down on the ground. Like it's like he's just had a real day.
The other one, the other one where he basically ages like 50 years over. Like,
oh, okay.
10 seconds.
Mm.
Maybe it's not Matt Damon. Maybe I'm thinking of someone else. Ruined it.
I anticipate I'll keep watching and thinking about this for the next 25 years. So that's what I got. I'll pass on to whoever wants to go next.
Maybe go in podcast order.
Okay, sure. I'll go next. Sam. I don't have much to say. I will say the one thing that I had queued up here to mention, a minor thing, is that I was fascinated by the Bakelite stuff. Was they're like, fill it with Bakelite, right? Where they start pumping this like fast curing resin, and I was like, is that real? And looked it up. Apparently it is a real thing, but not like that. It doesn't work like that. It takes like a full day or something like that to cure. But I thought that was really cool.
What, like, the handles for old pots and pans that had plastic handles were made of commonly.
Yeah. So it's I guess it's still useful, but just in very special and niche situations. But I just like that. That was just a cool idea. I don't know if that was something they got from somewhere or if somebody came up with that for this movie, but I thought that was really rad. How are we going to prevent them from getting in? Well, just encase them in resin. It.
Yeah. Maybe it was a crossover for the resin model crew from Gainax. They're like, no, we need to cross over with the resin models. Now everyone's a resin model.
I just figure they wanted to turn the Ava into a wall wart.
Yeah.
Gotta fill those way around. With epoxy for some reason.
Ava is the wall wart.
All right. Nick?
We could go on for ages just about EOE, but what I'll say is, you know, over the life of this podcast, I talk about things, properties that have been super formative in my lifetime. Obviously, I think Princess Mononoke was one that I said was very influential. Ranma being another one in my younger childhood, but especially in high school, Eva probably was one of the most like eye-opening and just defining series of my kind of development in watching anime and trying to find things that I didn't understand and want to pursue more of that into my young adulthood. Like, it made me want more of that. Before, I needed stories to be very clear and, you know, kind of like spelt out for me, but after watching Eva, I was like, you know, I went through all the emotions at the end of this. Like, I remember, you know, sitting in my parents' living room with the lights off because I watched this in the dark and, you know, let the tape run to the point where the VCR hit the auto rewind. And that's such a formative memory for me, good or bad. It's such a formative memory for me. And, you know, now 30 years later, my goodness, you know, for me to still be able to go back to it and still get so much from it on my whatever 15th, 20th viewing. I don't know. I haven't counted, but, and I still don't pretend to know, understand it all. And I hope I never do, because I want to be able to keep watching this and keep discovering something new about it. Like this was the first time watching in the theaters was me noticing, oh, Gendo is just a pair of legs that never turned into LAL. Huh. I wonder what that really means. Like, mm-hmm. First time I really asked that question. So I'm hoping that on my next watch and however long, I'll find something else. But yeah, that's my final statements on End of Eva.
All right, Mike.
Yeah, End of Eva is finally starting to make a little sense, which, because I definitely began my Eva journey the wrong way by starting with End of Eva. So.
Oh man, jeez.
So yeah, it makes a bit more sense in context of the rebuild movies, actually. I definitely get that, you know, Anno has changed some of what he's wanted to say, but he's been pretty consistent about a lot, too. So it's interesting.
Okay, so I think we go off that. It's interesting. I think that can sum it up. What do you think about Eva? Well, it's interesting.
It's a series of contrasts.
It is. Well, with that, we say thanks for listening. And until next time, this is Amo Kenzoku saying Kimochi Warui.